You guys ready? You feel good? Everybody good?
Feel fucking solid.
Feel amazing.
Feel amazing. Ba 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 ba
ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba
ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba. Game of Thrones.
I think that's a copyright violation. Stop.
I think it probably is.
We're allowed to do less than 30 seconds, Christopher. I looked it up.
Terrible.
It's so terrible that I'll get away
that
with it.
It is a violation to the universe.
Wow. It really is. We've broken natural
we've
law.
We've broken universal law.
Uh-huh. Great.
Well, you have. I have not, because I respect it.
Christopher, respecting natural law. So, we are the Brothers Geek, and this is our podcast. This is episode 108. We are talking Game of Thrones, season 8, episode 4. If you haven't watched episode 4 yet of season 8, you should stop this right now because we're about to spoil the shit out of it.
And some shit goes down in this episode.
There's some shit that goes down.
There is.
So
there is things that happen. Yes.
Things happen in this episode.
I would argue a more emotionally impactful episode than the Battle of Winterfell, than the Long Night, in terms of things, you know, chess pieces moving across the board. I think this episode is more impactful to the overall story of the season than the last episode.
The more I think about episode 3, the more I was so disappointed with it. Literally freaking 7 seasons of build up to this thing, this zombie horde, and everything gets summed up in one episode.
Yeah, let's not rehash episode 3, yeah. Dude. Let's talk about episode 4.
Read my essay.
Read Chris's essay. Go to the website. It's surprisingly well written. Honestly.
Surprisingly, because he's such a dummy.
He has no command of language. He doesn't write for a living. Well, he's not educated.
He writes like an imbecile
most of the time.
Why do I even join you two? I should start my own podcast.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, that would.
The Christopher Smalls Progress.
What fucking statement is that?
Yeah. That episode by yourself, that wouldn't be off putting or kind of.
That would be. I'd call my podcast Syndroming.
I was just going to call that. Oh my god, that's hilarious.
So true. Oh my god, that'd be perfect.
Call back to like episode 10.
Hell yeah.
Episode 10. Fucking love it. Oh my god.
Love it.
Well, that's just that essay is me syndroming in writing form. So
it wasn't hence an essay.
Yes.
You know. Mm-hmm.
A little bit more coherent than my syndroming.
Yeah, no, so, definitely coherent. Yeah. So if you have further thoughts on episode 3, go check out the website, brothersgeek.com. Read Christopher's episode.
We welcome comments to the essay.
Absolutely.
Listen to the episode that we recorded about episode 3 and then read Chris's thing. And now let's talk about episode 4.
Episode 4.
So everybody, like most people survive. It starts off with like, hey, like everybody's dead. Let's do like this big funeral scene, and then
poignant
like
scene.
I like the scene. It was nice. Yep. It was handled well.
I like it too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Pretty good. Pretty interesting. And then
I love did you guys catch that? I think that was the Night Watch benediction that Jon said to all of the folks.
He lit them on fire, right? They were the shields that guarded the realms of men. Yep. Absolutely.
I don't remember if it was the full.
Right.
A fallen brother benediction, but it was definitely had significant components of it.
Definitely. No, thing. I picked it up on that as well.
Yeah. So I thought that was good.
I did like that as well. Yeah. No,
yep.
There's,
yep.
If you've never, I mean, the, what I, I've always, I've said this for a long time is what I engage with most is the lore of this show and the Night's Watch Oath. If you've actually ever, if you've never read it or even read it out loud, do yourself a favor if you're a fan of the show and actually do that and actually look at it. It's a wonderful piece of writing. It's a really nice oath that they swear.
It's actually written by George R. R. Martin, not like
that's what I'm
trash
saying.
That we've been watching in the past 3 episodes.
Easy now.
Dude, are the characters getting dumber? Like, what is happening?
You, support your argument with evidence. Who's getting stupider?
The showrunners are definitely stupider. The showrunners and writers are definitely rushing to the end.
Rushing to the end. Like, they just pushed, wanted to get it over with. And, you know, and it's like, oh, my God. Like, take some time. Like, take some breaths. Like, figure
hold
stuff
on.
Out.
Have some scenes where people talk to each other for a little bit. I'm going to push right back against you. When you say take some time. No, it is not so bad. The whole scene with the feast and the different conversations that are happening. I love that scene.
Yep.
Tormund and he's drinking and sloshing wine around and making fun of John. And then the drinking game between Brienne and Jaime.
Making his move on Brienne.
And he gets rejected.
All of that good stuff.
I love that scene. You talk about, I mean, yes, is this is the back half of the episode rushed? Sure.
Because it contains, that scene contains all the character moments that we want after the major battle, right? And it also does not forget the tensions that exist.
The interpersonal tensions.
Yeah, right.
That have been built over seasons.
It's all there. And again, I think that's just a reminder that these folks are terribly flawed humans that can't just let go of all of these things, mainly because of the resolution of the fight with the dead. Okay, it's over. And so they're able to emotionally move on because of the nature of that conclusion, right? So it allows the writers and the showrunners to say, okay, they're going to move on because it is all over. They have finished this fight, which, read my essay. And so I thought, you know, given that context, I loved that opening stuff. I thought it was good. It's the best stuff of Game of Thrones. That's why I love it. So
I agree completely. And as they, you know, it has some fan service elements, but I think that
it has lots of fan service.
And fan service isn't inherently bad. I was thinking about this with Endgame as well. There's lots of fan service.
I wouldn't call it fan service. It's payoff. It's payoff for dedicated viewing. It's payoff for dedicated fandom. I mean, there are, I think it's not calculated payoff. I think it fits within the narrative of the show. That's part of why I agree with you, Andrew, about it's not fan service just for fan service sake.
Yeah.
It is payoff.
Yeah.
Now there are huge mistakes they are making and real big stumbles in terms of getting to and shortcuts to some of that narrative payoff. Really bad, really, really bad stuff that they're doing. But in general, they hit the right tone, they keep the messaging, they keep all of the inner character stuff. They're doing a decent job with regard to
I felt more emotionally invested in what was happening this episode by far than the previous episode. I mean, all the bits with Jaime and Brienne, and we can be mad at Jaime for his choices to go back to King's Landing, and we'll get to that. And you know, but I was more emotionally invested in this episode than, I mean, obviously the Battle of Winterfell. I think of the four that we've seen this season, the best episode remains A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. And that's the quietest episode we've had on Game of Thrones in multiple seasons. It's a lot of people sitting around and talking. And I would argue the best parts of this episode are just that, when you have people kind of just interacting.
Yep.
Yeah, you got to have the big arch moments of Dany riding a dragon, and you have to have the moments of, you know, political intrigue, but the when Sansa and the Hound are sitting there and they're just talking, you know, a little bit about their past and, you know, the choices that they've both have made and how the Hound really can't rest until he's got to go kill his brother.
Right.
Nothing's going to end for him until he kills his own brother.
Right. He's got that. I mean, Sansa's got to go kill Cersei and he's got to go kill, like, it's like these two are just going to go.
Arya,
you
mean?
Go. Oh yeah. Sorry. Arya's got to go kill Cersei.
Oh no, they're definitely heading to King's Landing to do some murder. Cause there's no way around that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're leaving out the main person who is going to King's Landing to do murder.
Who's Jamie. That? Jamie.
Yeah.
Jamie's definitely. People are misinterpreting that whole scene.
Me too. Yeah, I agree with you. He is
not going back to King's Landing to be there to help his sister. Yeah. He is going back to King's Landing to kill her.
Oh, yeah.
He is going back there to kill his sister.
And just think about how that choice gets made and how, you know, they get information that the Greyjoys ambushed Dany's fleet outside of Dragonstone.
Right.
One of the dragons is now killed. They're at a, you know, their advantages are rapidly dwindling. And Jaime has always wrestled with his identity as the Kingslayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're at a point now where Jaime has accepted himself, and that I think
the point of that whole speech
completely, and it's been building to that, and a line
the prophecy
from
lines
it,
up
it's
too.
Kind of it's kind of like weirdly acted and delivered and written because there is some sort of confusion. The way he's talking about it is like
it
I
is
know
totally in keeping with the writers and their stupid sort of setup. Where they set up Sansa and Arya fighting before Littlefinger is put on trial. It is same sort of head fake that they're doing for the viewers.
It's ham-handed misdirection is what it is.
It is misdirection, and they think that they're being sort of cute because of the fandom and the deep investment and blah, blah, blah. But, but this is another one of those. I thought it was well-acted. But people are completely misinterpreting it.
People are focusing on as well because everyone's so emotionally invested in Brienne and how and what she's become. She's such a pure character, and people are so invested in her getting what she wants because she's always been the most stalwart character.
You're exactly right.
And she got what she wanted. Her you're and Jaime exactly right. and. Just
and
the fact that she's so heartbroken.
They're viewing it as a huge betrayal.
Yeah. Which in a lot of ways it is. I mean, it is a betrayal.
It's a complex emotional moment. That's for sure.
For Jaime, it is. For Brienne, it's not. She just feels the betrayal, Brienne and we too. Go with her.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Yeah.
For Brienne, too.
Yeah, no,
that's a complex moment for her, too, because she fears for him. She knows that she's likely never to see him regardless of what might happen, because if he's going on the side of Cersei, he is going to die.
Oh, yeah, there's no way he gets out of that alive.
If he's going somehow to oppose her with the queen, he's going to die. So, I mean, you're exactly right, Andrew. The reaction is everyone loves Brienne. She is a great character. She's one of the most beloved characters. She gets what she wants. She finally sort of realizes this is her moment with the person she loves. And oh, holy shit.
Well, she's fulfilled every oath.
Yep.
She's defended Winterfell against the army of the dead. She has been knighted. So she's fully a knight, and she's fully been embraced as a woman as well.
Yep.
By Jaime. So all of these things have come together for her, and we're so happy for her. And then she has this moment of heartbreak. And I think that people are missing the point even too with her reaction to the heartbreak. Like, Brienne wouldn't react like that. She's more of a badass. She's more kind of,
she's allowed herself to be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think she's always been that way. If you remember way back when we first kind of met her, in love with Renly Baratheon, she was. And how she reacts to his death.
Yep.
She has always been, I mean, she fights it in herself, but she's always been like a very emotionally available person. Like, you can see when she gets stung by people that she's really stung. She just wants to be accepted. And this whole season, the arc of her has been finally being accepted and approved of and fulfilling all this stuff, fulfilling her destiny, really.
Yeah.
And now she has this moment of heartbreak right after we see her really kind of the man that she loves, that she's loved for years, that she has thought the best of or come to think
she's in the past couple episodes, she's gotten everything she's wanted. Like,
exactly
everything that she's and then we snatch it away from her. But like, in the stupidest kind of way, like, obviously he has to go home and do something with Cersei. He can't just let that be. He can't just stay there with her.
Yeah.
So it's good, but like, I don't know how they're portraying it. Like you said, Christopher, it's like that Arya Sansa thing from last season. It's just like, I see what you're doing and it's not working. Like you're trying to trick us and it's a stupid trick. Like,
I don't agree that they need to, the misdirection for misdirection sake, yeah, is just silly.
It's just silly.
It's just frustrating us for no reason.
So yeah, like Drogar?
Who are you trying to talk about?
The dragon dies.
Rhaegal.
Thank you. And then
you guys would fucking lose if you went to Game of Thrones trivia night, dude. You can't even name the dragons. You guys are pathetic.
Wow.
You know who on this podcast got second at Game of Thrones trivia night? Me.
Oh. Wait, was it you? Oh man,
no, it was me and Ashton. We got second.
That is. Did you get a cookie?
We got $25 off our bar tab.
We've already talked about this.
You got a cookie.
I would have liked a cookie that night.
This is why we tolerate your existence on
Did
the podcast.
Did you get a new binky?
A Game of Thrones binky, yes, jerk.
Oh my god. Please don't do the baby voice, Christopher. Not again.
you are not allowed to do that anymore.
Why not?
Because it is deeply upsetting to me.
Deeply disturbing.
It is so disturbing.
Oh my god. Okay, yeah, so
Rhaegal gets smoked. I was watching that with Ashton, mm-hmm, and Ashley, mm, and I'm going to rat Ashton out right now. She screamed at that moment.
Well, yeah,
it's a shocking moment.
Everybody doesn't want the dragons to die. Yeah, it's shocking. And they like built up these giant like crossbows.
Scorpions.
Yeah,
scorpions.
pretty quickly. Like, they have a shit ton of those now, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
So,
well, I mean, they figured out the process of making them, and I mean, yes, the time has passed in the show very quickly. I thought they called them scorpions.
I've heard ballistas. Yeah.
I think both terms work.
Hmm.
Anyway.
That makes sense. That's how you fight a fucking dragon for sure.
Oh no, like, you gotta have a gigantic bolt throwing.
Isn't that how you know they killed Smaug in The Hobbit is one of those things?
Well, I mean,
the black arrow.
In the book, isn't it Bard the Bowman just with his, you know, he's just such a badass archer.
He doesn't have a like a special kind of crossbow thing.
How does that work? Yeah,
Christopher, the resident Lord of the Rings aficionado. Scholar.
How does Smaug get brought down?
In the books, yeah. Do we lose Chris? Great. As soon as we ask him a question.
As soon as he needs to be useful, he's not fucking there.
Correct.
God damn it.
She gets, the dragon gets smoked. The lady, Missandei, gets captured and then beheaded. Jesus.
Yeah, that was tough.
Yeah, I mean, I really like her. Like, things are not good for Dany right now. They're not.
Well,
going
yeah,
good.
She's gotten pushed right up against the wall. Like,
she's gonna start murdering here in the next episode.
She would have started murdering already, except she's been listening to her advisor. I get the feeling she's gonna like fly to King's Landing, cover of darkness, and just burn the city to the ground.
Yeah,
like that's like her next step. It's for her literally to burn the city to the ground by night.
I mean the way they're kind of like pushing the story is like Dany is kind of not the right message, and like everybody kind of, I mean, the big reveal of this episode is Jon Snow telling everybody about we lost Christopher completely.
Yeah, so completely. Hopefully he'll come back.
Yeah, we'll keep going for a little bit here and then see if he pops back in.
See if he comes back on. Yeah, Jon Snow revealing all and then to that Arya trickles and down. Sansa.
And that trickles down to Sansa, and then that trickles down to Tyrion, down to Varys.
What do you think of...
And they're leading towards this thing about, like maybe Dany isn't the right person to back.
Varys definitely doesn't think so. He's gotten to the point now that one of those scenes where he and Tyrion are talking, and Tyrion, I mean, he says, Christopher, are you there?
I am back.
Okay. Woo! Thank you.
I don't know, man. You were dropped off. I don't know if you were talking, but we're talking about John devolving.
Like I completely lost internet access right there.
Oh wow!
Oh, whoa.
That's not good.
It happens sometimes. What we did ask when you got booted was the bard shooting a black arrow at Smaug, being the resident token expert. Does he use a bow or does he use one of those ballista things like in the movie? Because in the movie they use
a ballista thing, not a bow. It's too big for a bow.
Right, okay, right. So it's like a big
horizontal. Like the ballista.
Oh,
thing.
Okay. Right, so right, even right. In the book,
that's like what you fight dragons with, dude.
Yeah,
like,
you gotta throw a huge bolt at him. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Something that's fast and big.
And it only works on Smaug because. He has like a patch on his chest or something, right? It's missing like his armor scale.
Scales. Yes. Yeah. There is a weakness in his underbelly.
Smaug was the best part of those stupid ass Hobbit movies by far.
100%.
Like, I mean, that Cumberbatch is so good and the dragon looks so awesome.
Awesome.
And the dialogue that he does, that he has with
Bilbo.
Martin Freeman is so good. Those scenes are really good, but the rest
and,
of the
and he's beautifully animated. It looks incredible.
It looks amazing. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But anyways, back to Game of Thrones. We're talking about like the whole dynamic with Jon getting revealed to his brother and sister, who gets revealed to Tyrion, who gets revealed to Varys, and then that like kind of spreading and them trying to like them kind of discussing not backing Dany anymore.
That scene is pivotal to, and it's a weird sort. You go back to, are these characters getting more stupid? And and that scene is very. Tyrion is always a straight shooter. He's always been a straight shooter, and he's all uncomfortable about being a straight shooter in that moment. I don't.
Yeah.
He has been uncomfortable about being a straight shooter for a while.
Well, I think Sansa calls him on it. He's grown afraid of Daenerys.
I think that's right. And it's hard to understand.
That's one of the best scenes. It's like you sort to see that he is afraid of her. Like she could just murder him. Jon would never just murder him. Like Jon wouldn't just murder anyone. Like, but she's.
Yeah. I mean, he would. I mean, he was taught by Ned Stark that the person who passes the sentence should swing the sword. So he takes that shit very serious.
Yeah. But he doesn't.
And we've seen Jon make foolish decisions too, like the Battle of the Bastards. He would have, you know, the actions he takes to try to save Rickon. You know, they would have lost.
Dead. It's lucky he's not dead. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's very lucky. He got lucky at the Battle of the Bastards. So we've seen Jon make dumb decisions.
Well, I mean, the reason why Jon's not dead at the Battle of the Bastards is because Sansa showed up with the cavalry.
100%. 100%. But I'm just saying, Jon is not this mythical figure who makes every right choice and is always coming out on top.
But he's not. He wouldn't just murder people, is what I'm saying. Like, she's okay with, like, just burning people who don't bend the knee, you know, and I don't know. That's part of the thing are they leading to Dany defeats Cersei and then it becomes a struggle between Jon and Dany? Like
that's a lot to try to jam into two episodes. I have no idea where they're going.
Well,
two episodes left. I mean,
before I dropped off, the point I was going to make was that Varys and Tyrion are talking treason in that conversation.
Yeah.
Varys is very clear that he will make his decisions based upon what's best for the king, the realm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That includes making sure she dies.
Oh, no. And I even, Tyrion even knows that. Tyrion says right. to her, says to Varys, please don't. Like, yeah. Varys is ready to put a plan in motion to have her killed.
That's crazy.
Crazy. And you know that he can pull that off. Like, mm-hmm. he has the ability to get that figured out and to execute that. He's done that before.
Yeah. Right,
so, right.
But who the hell knows? I totally agree with you, Andrew, about I have no idea how they're going to sort of resolve
I legitimately
this,
what
the
know
end is going to be in the final two episodes. I have no clue.
I have no clue who's going to come out on top. Legitimately, I mean, zero.
They have a lot of, I mean, I honestly thought that like they were going to kill half the characters in the third episode. And now with so many characters alive and so many things unresolved and only two episodes left, what the fuck are they going to do, man? Like, you got to start to like figure some of the shit out. Answer some questions.
But here's, do you guys have the same reaction I did? In terms of emotional moments and how well that first half of the episode was, where they don't have any interaction between John and Ghost. What is the deal with their treatment of Ghost?
Yeah.
I don't understand that at all. That is a lazy, easy, unbelievably great emotional moment that they could have teed up.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. paid off.
Yeah, I don't understand that choice.
They don't even do that.
I read some stuff on the internet today. Is like John rides a dragon and suddenly he doesn't give a shit about his wolf anymore. It's like,
is it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand the choice at all.
Ghost
really.
All CGI, and they. It's a hard. It would look bad him interacting with a CG.
I don't know, dude. I mean, the dragons are all CG, and they look fucking amazing. The dragons look great.
It's not even like a whole completely CGI like wolf. They just have to make the wolf look bigger.
Right.
Like it's a real life wolf that they make look bigger.
I don't get it. I do not get it. I don't get it at all.
Because and that's one thing I left out of my essay that I should not have, which was, you know, the fucking books tee up this unbelievable connection between Starks and their dire wolves.
Yep.
And they don't. They don't like develop that, and clearly there is a deeper connection between the humans and these direwolves. The Starks,
well, especially the Starks, yeah, because Bran in the books wargs into Summer constantly, and he, you know, takes on some of, you know, he can take on some of Summer's identity when he wargs into Summer.
When did Summer die? I don't remember.
Summer got killed when the Night King found the Three-Eyed Raven's cave.
That's when Hodor got smoked too.
Yeah, yeah. So we lost Summer and Hodor in that same moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's another piece of the puzzle that they are rushing through and making.
Just take him with you.
Disappointing. Cares? No, yeah. I think he makes the right decision.
Oh, I do too.
Just
I
don't how think they, he, how just, they
no, like, right, he doesn't right. even interact with on screen. He doesn't interact with the dog, the dire wolf. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Seriously? You're not gonna put that on screen?
Yeah, it really could have been handled. I don't understand the choice at all. It really should have been. It could have been a much better moment for John.
Seriously.
It just wasn't. I mean, he has this great moment with Sam. He has this great moment with Tormund,
right?
You know, and then he even has a really nice moment with Gilly, and then he doesn't have a nice moment with. I mean, it's just they look at each other.
Yeah,
come on, that's been his companion for years. He's raised him from a pup. I don't understand it.
Real bummer. Yeah,
yeah, and he saved his ass like a few times over the years for sure.
Yep,
for sure. Yeah, multiple times.
Multiple times.
You know, he helps win the Battle of the Wall versus the Wildlings.
Right.
Like he helps turn the tide when they let Ghost out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, man. Big miss. Big miss.
Anything else from this episode?
Yeah, we got. What was your reaction to the Sansa Clegane conversation?
The only thing that I started to really wonder about Clegane, and in the books, they don't even really get at it either. I really get the feeling like Clegane he does not have like a sexual reality in his life. Like, is he so scarred and so abused that he's never allowed himself even the moment's softness of, I mean, you know, has he ever gone to a whorehouse even? I mean, we joke about, you know, Brienne was a virgin until Jamie. Clegane just has no sexual identity on the show. And I'm wondering if that's a reflection of how abused he was as a child.
I think he's just a very broken person.
He
only has emotional capacity as a big brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's all he's capable of.
Protecting maybe people that are weaker than him.
Right.
They
kind of tee that up in like earlier seasons I think it was the Blackwater Bay battle that he like offered to help her escape. And there's a little bit of like weird, like I kind of care about you. I just don't want you to see you get treated. Like, was there any sexualness there? I remember thinking there kind of was, and she kind of read that too and was uncomfortable going.
I think
she
read that as dangerous more than
right. I think that's right. Right. I think she was, oh my God, this humongous person can just rape me at any moment.
Nonstop. Yeah. Right.
Well, that's a reflection of her constantly being in danger.
Right.
And the unknown of going with him, but staying in King's
Landing. She didn't really know him. So she's a very menacing figure and all of that.
Their relationship is really complicated because, I mean, he had to stand there and watch her get mistreated for years and years and years.
But and really showed her some of the only kindness that, and I mean, Tyrion showed her a lot of kindness, but
her conversation in this episode was complicated too, because she like talks about, you know, without much, you know, again, I'd say it's complicated because she credits all of the, I mean, just horrific treatment she received and raping over and over again, and everything that she had to sort of go through to become the person that she is. And she like gives like credit to all of that.
Yeah, that's a little fucked up.
And
and
so I guess you could conceptually read it as, wow, she's the strongest person on the show now.
Yeah.
She's the most self-aware and the strongest emotionally, and she is the one who should be ruling everything because she is clearly has the benefit of unbelievable.
Sansa is always moving pieces on. I mean, she
is now.
She is now, for sure. I mean, the last, since she is definitely the person who she has learned from Littlefinger that either you're moving pieces or you are a piece.
Right.
And to see her, I mean, she flat out betrays John because John asks her to swear to keep that secret about him being a Targaryen and a Stark.
Well, it's in her interest. Like, of course, she doesn't want the Dragon Queen to be in power.
It's much better. It is 100% power.
And then, she doesn't give a fuck. Like,
oh no, but she's John totally
will be king, and she'll be like in charge in Winterfell.
She has become so confident in her choice, in her decision making. Like, she doesn't sacrifice her decision making for John's decision making in that moment. Like, she swears, John tells her to seek it, and she's like, you know what, I can't keep this a secret because John will not do what is right, what I think is right. She does not sacrifice her decision making for his at all. So she is the strongest character. She is totally confident that what she wants is the right path.
And then Gendry being made like
Lords of Storm End,
cool. You know, and then him that was offering himself power to Arya.
That was absolutely a power move by Daenerys. It's like, totally. I am the queen of the Seven Kingdoms. I have the right and power to name a bastard.
Name you a lord.
One of the lords of the Seven Kingdoms. Exactly.
Yeah, well, that's a power move. And like him offering to marry Arya, And her and her, like, she's got unfinished, like, that's not her thing. She's not a lady. She's not going to go with him.
She's not going to wear pretty.
Absolutely in character.
She has more murder.
She has more murdering to do, for sure.
Yeah, she really does. She has more murdering to do. She's got to go kill Cersei.
Yeah.
She has to finish her list. And now that the Battle of Winterfell is done and her family's safe, you know, she's going to go finish what she needs to finish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the Bronn scene where he shows up with the
crossbow. Oh, that's great. Those three together are so fun.
I mean, that was... I you know, again, I think it's a moment of fear on the part of the showrunners and writers now, where it would have been much more fascinating had Bronn shown up and killed one of them or attempted to kill both.
Yeah.
But I think it's in keeping with Bronn's self-interest and reading the tea leaves and always making the right decision on where to be and who to be on the side of.
He's coming out pretty on top from this. I mean, like, he doesn't want to kill Tyrion, like, necessarily. He knows that it's...
I don't think he wants to kill anyone. He just has no problem killing anyone.
Right.
Right. But exactly.
I mean, he's taking a huge risk because if Cersei wins, he's a dead man.
Oh, yeah. And if she learns that he had the opportunity to end both of them and he didn't, she definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, those three together are so fun. And what another part that I actually really like that I... So they're sitting in the Wintertown Tavern. Like, they're not sitting in the hall at Winterfell because Bronn couldn't get in there. So they leave the castle, the two of them, and the tavern is completely empty because everybody's fucking dead.
Yeah.
Like, there's nobody living in Winter... There's like such a small population in Wintertown now.
Or they're in Winterfell, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That they go to this empty tavern and Bronn just happens to show up.
Right.
And it makes sense that they're the only three people that would be in this tavern because everybody's dead.
Yeah, dude. How was Daenerys' army like? That's something that doesn't make any sense. Like, the castle was overrun. Like, you only see like main characters at the end of that freaking episode, and it's like, where's your army? How many soldiers do you have?
There's some unsullied left. I mean, they didn't all get smoked. They were still fighting at the end.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, the Dothraki are fucking gone. At least what's left.
Well, they even talk about the Dothraki being like a part of that, but like, we all saw them ride into the battle.
It was like 30,000 Dothraki. I'd be shocked if there was 1,000 left. You know, just stragglers.
They have a couple.
You're roboting a little bit, Patrick.
And then we get to the final sort of 20 minutes to a half hour of the episode, which is, oh, holy shit, we got to move this forward because we got two episodes.
Yeah, and it just literally pedaled to the metal.
Right.
It's like all of a sudden they're back on Dragonstone.
If they're fighting a war, and it's a war of betrayal, why wouldn't Cersei fire all the scorpions at once into that small group?
Yeah, I don't understand that part. Like, if they're all there,
a flag of truce, maybe?
I think they were. Yeah, they like
maybe they were. Maybe that's the protocol: is the hands go out to talk to one another.
Yeah,
so they are under some sort of flag of truce. I guess
that
makes sense.
But Cersei is okay blowing up churches and killing tons of civilians. Like, she doesn't care. Like, why wouldn't she just shoot all of them?
Shoot
every single ballista.
Well, the dragon was parked probably out of reach.
Yeah, but like, who cares? Kill Daenerys, and then the dragon. You could just pick off the stupid ass dragon later. You know,
I mean, they had to have that confrontation of that. I mean, it's ham-handed again. There's lots of moments. I mean, when the moments play out, I think they're kind of nice. I like the fact that Tyrion and Qyburn interact, and then Tyrion's just like, "You're useless. You're just repeating what Cersei told you to." Right. I'm gonna go talk to my sister directly. Yeah. I mean.
I think we still get the benefit of these characters and these actors who are great at what they do, and so they're getting the most out of what the writers are giving them, and so
all
of it is phenomenal. I love sort of that stuff.
Definitely,
I feel connected to all of them, and we're leading to the end of this tale, and I remain hopeful that the show will conclude in a satisfactory way.
Yep.
That does not mean, as you've said, Andrew, and we've said, in a happy way.
Mm. Yeah.
I think
they're too chicken shit to end it in a sad way. Like I Daenerys and Jon, one of them lives. Like absolutely. Like they will not end the show because so people they're so worried about incurring the flack that they're playing it safe. Like George R. R. Martin doesn't give a shit about playing it safe. And like it's
I think it's just the show has become
too afraid.
Too big for its own good. It is now pop culture.
Yeah, it's too big. It's pop culture, and so many people are watching this season. Yeah.
I mean, but I don't know. You can.
But there's a huge difference, dude, because David Chase, The Sopranos was the show.
Yeah.
And he had the artistic courage to end that show in the way that he did.
Black screen.
And these folks, I don't think they get it.
Yeah.
I think that's at the heart of my essay.
They don't get the show at all.
They don't get the show. Song of Ice and Fire.
They get the show, Patrick. You're being pretty dramatic here.
Show. You guys know
that I haven't liked the past couple seasons. You know this.
They don't get the Song of Ice and Fire. That's what they don't get. They don't get this thing that Martin created, and they don't get all the depth of what he created.
Right.
They're not getting that. And so
there's much less nuance.
Yeah, no, it's become more popcorn.
Yes.
And I don't
Of course Danny walks away with a grimace on her face. Like that's the only
I didn't have a problem with that ending.
I didn't.
I really didn't.
It's the right reaction.
It is the right reaction. And now I mean, it's a mini series. I have no problem with cliffhangers. Each episode tells a contained story, but it's playing out a long arc over the six. So I don't need bows on every single episode.
Let's talk sort of predictions about the next episode. And
well, I have no guess.
There has to be a fight between the Hound and the Mountain, right? I mean, 100%. That's going to happen.
That has to happen.
I will not be satisfied unless unless there is that. And I totally agree.
That has to happen for this show to end properly.
I will not be happy unless Arya at least attempts to kill Cersei. Like, I don't know if she needs to, because like if Arya can just kill anybody, she kills a Night King, she kills Cersei. It seems a little bit like she's like the solver of all problems. But
it would be an interesting choice though to make kind of in all when you look back over the entire course of the series. It's Arya's hero story, not Jon Snow's hero story.
Mm-hmm,
Looking back over the entire course of her character,
I just had a thought.
Yeah. Oh my. Well, I hope so.
Yeah. I think a really nice payoff to the rekindling of the Hound Arya relationship is she helps him kill the Mountain.
Oh, I think so. I had that thought. Like.
And
Mountain
I
has become,
think that prevents her from being able to kill Cersei.
Because I think the emotionally satisfying end for Cersei, for all of us, and that would make the most sense, is Jaime eliminating Cersei.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's right.
I think that fulfills the prophecy. Mm-hmm. I think that's the emotional. I think it pays off the head fake. And I think that, again, there's another head fake, which is, oh, of course, Arya is going to kill Cersei. No, I think in that confrontation, Cersei gets away.
Mm.
Because Arya and the Hound have to fight the Mountain, the zombie Mountain.
Well, in a
right?
story,
right?
I think so. Yeah, I agree. And I think in a storytelling sense, Jaime and Cersei's story is not resolved yet.
Mm.
Like You're they right. need to resolve their story. And If the showrunners honored the rules or the kind of the context, the, you know, A Song of Ice and Fire, one has to kill the other for Cersei, you know, for Jaime and Cersei's story to resolve. One has to kill the other, I think, in some way. And I think I hypothesize that Jaime is going to kill Cersei. Even though a part of me thinks Cersei is going to be the one that actually lives through. Shit.
Mm.
I think that's right.
I could see that being a possibility too.
I totally see that as a possibility, but again, I think that that's the more bold artistic choice. And I don't trust these guys.
It's too ticket.
I don't trust these guys to do that. That would be the unbelievably bold choice, is to let her somehow win now.
Well, and think, and I mean, we've seen that bold choice made in popcorn. Yeah. Think about this. Just dawned
she kills
on
the
me.
Dragon.
Think
she
about the end of
Dr.
Horrible and the sing along blog.
Yeah.
How he gets everything. You know, he loses the woman he loves. He becomes like this supervillain. And now he's totally fucking alone and he's unhappy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Cersei getting everything she wants, killing all of her enemies, and realizing that she's not happy and that her victory means nothing because she is completely alone. If that could be the end of her arc, because she's always been a woman who loved her children and she loved Jaime as much as that is self-possession. You know, her love for Jaime is self-possession. It's still a kind of love that she felt in a real way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for her being alone, that could be, if it's handled well, that could be an emotionally satisfying resolution to the show.
Yeah. But, you know,
they might be, they're probably too chicken shit.
There's no question they are.
Yeah.
What's with the shot of her?
And they need
What's with the shots of her standing at the window looking out like all the time?
Much she's more just, simple in their approach, and so it will be a definitive resolution.
Yeah. I don't disagree.
Yeah.
All right. Two episodes left.
Patrick.
Can't hear Patrick anymore.
No. What happened to him? Patrick?
He looks like he's trying to talk.
Are you back? Patrick? No.
He should jump off and then jump back on. That solved your problem.
All right.
There you-
Two episodes
there you are.
Left.
You came back.
Okay, you came back.
If you'd like to help
You're back. Back. Okay, we back? Lost you for about 20
okay.
seconds.
Okay. Yeah. I was just going to wrap up. If you'd like to help Andrew with his trivia, you should email him at kingofthenorth52. Do you hear me
You're
still?
You're cutting way in and out.
All right, I'll wrap it up. I'll wrap it up. If you want to email me, you can email me at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. You can email the show at brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. Go to our Twitter feed at Brothers Geek Podcast. Go to our Facebook. Go to website brothersgeek.com. We'll have this episode posted in the next 24 hours. Send us your comments. We got two episodes left. Any final thoughts, Christopher?
I remain a huge fan of the show. I love the show. I do not want to see it end. In fact, I started reading the books again.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I just this world is something that's really wonderful that Martin has created. And I'm very hopeful that what we will see in the final two episodes will be a mix of amazing and gut-wrenching and all of the above.
I agree completely. We are the Brothers Geek. Thanks for listening to our podcast this evening, and on your left.